Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This is our 2015 Year in Review episode. In this episode,
we're building unity between different communities and meeting other people that are also host to the pipeline and want to protect the lands and the waters.
Yes, tonight we demonstrate that Indigenous women are not worth less.
We can't continue killing our black men and getting away with it, black women and getting away with it. Black lives do matter. We're not animals that can be shot dead in the streets.
This episode of Groundwire was produced by the Groundwire National Coordination Team and recorded on unceded Attawandaran territory in Guelph, Ontario at CFRU. I'm your host, Kim Logue, and this is the 2015 Groundwire Year in Review episode, where we highlight some of the most significant news stories covered by Groundwire this past year. Resource extraction and its accompanying industries have been big business in Canada, especially in the past 10 years under Conservative leadership. Resistance to this environmental and human degradation was especially heightened in 2015, and Groundwire was there to cover local movements with a focus on Indigenous perspectives.
We have a couple excerpts from the top environmental stories that Groundwire has featured this past year. Michael Welch and Victoria King from CKUT bring us this story from August 17th.
First Nations women and men and their allies over the course of a week, starting on August 2nd, coincidentally aligning with the first day of the federal election campaign, and ending August 8th. They would travel for about 30 kilometers a day, stopping along the way to camp for a total of 125 kilometers. Indigenous teachings were very much at the heart of the action. What you're about to hear are the voices from the walk recorded over the course of that week.
My name's Crystal, and I helped to organize this water walk from Eagle Lake to Shoal Lake, Ontario, Treaty 3, Anishinaabe territory. It's been a while now, maybe a couple years, since we first heard about the Energy East pipeline project. We've been opposed to this for quite a while now, and a lot of people I know are also opposed to it. So we have a number of people from different communities. Like, there's somebody who joined us from Eagle Lake today. We have people from Grassy Narrows, people from Shoal Lake 39 and 40. What we're doing is we're building unity between different communities and meeting other people that are also opposed to the pipeline and want to protect the lands and the waters. So out of this, I hope that this is a catalyst towards further organizing.
Featured in our August 31st episode, this one comes to us from Gunarki O'Sullivan.
The LNG Corporation is coming into the territory today to drill, and they're going to cut the eelgrass, which will threaten the ecosystem. The people of the territory are exercising their rights and title. And I have Joel Wesley here to give us the details on what's happening. Hello, Joel. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
I'm really pleased to have you here and to follow up with the people of your territory about your concerns regarding the environment and LNG. Tell us what your struggle has been so far and where you plan to go from here.
Well, the last couple of days there, we got word that the LNG company was planning on coming in and doing some test drilling there on the island, and they had another group there that were planning on coming in today to cut some of the eelgrass off Fleur Bank so they can try and transplant it upriver there somewhere else. And we're here to exercise their Aboriginal rights and title. Back in May there, and they offered us some dollar figures there, and we unanimously voted no again to the location where they were planning on putting it.
And now today, the people of your territory, people are gathering from all over the area, not to protest the fleet of boats, but to exercise their rights and title to the land and to protect the environment.
We have a number of members from other nations with us right now, and we have five of our tribal members with us right now.
Sheila Ferrando from CKUT brought us this feature on November 9th.
Since the sewage dump plan was announced by Mayor Dennis Coderre in late September, a group of Mohawks calling themselves the Protectors of the St. Lawrence River have carried out a number of actions in opposition, including rallies outside Montreal City Hall, press conferences, a temporary rail blockade, and a campout with a sacred fire in Kahanawake. We're joined now by Agazarage Deer. Could you tell us a bit more about why you're opposed to the sewage dump?
First, it's a war on creation in a sense that everybody relies on water. As humans, we are made up of water. So by dumping 8 billion liters of this untreated waste, which is not only just household waste, it's industrial and medical waste. There's floating objects, there's medications, hormones, syringes, blood, et cetera, et cetera. So whatever is in the water, whoever is drinking the water, whatever is drinking the water, animals, fish, people, plant life, it's toxic, it's poisonous, and it will lead future issues to people, health issues and environmental issues and whatnot.
And lastly, here's some coverage from climate marches in Vancouver and Winnipeg, brought to us by Michael Welch of CKUW and Jane Williams of Co-op Radio Red Eye.
This afternoon, we could be at a tailgate party, getting ready for tonight's game. But we are here to make a statement. We want to do our part to save Mother Earth.
Dennis LeNevieu, and I'm a retired biophysicist. I used to work at Atomic Energy of Canada. The biggest emitter of greenhouse gas in the provinces is from flaring of fossil fuels, flaring of sour gas in southwest Manitoba, and there's no attempt to regulate that. The fossil fuel industry has to start ramping down, and there's so much entrenched interest and investment in that industry, it's very resistant to change.
Message for the media. We the people, going free the people. Climate changes with community and with the people lies possibility as well as responsibility. So let's vibe up, come together, make it more better, man.
Are we ready?
Yes.
Let's.
On December 8th, the newly elected Liberal government announced the launch of the public inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women. The first phase of the pre-inquiry consultation is already underway. Minister of the Status of Women, Patty Hajou, and Minister of Indigenous and Northern Affairs Canada, Caroline Bennett, are holding a meeting in Thunder Bay, Ontario, with survivors, families, and loved ones of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls on January 6th. Now let's take a listen back to Groundwire's coverage of grassroots organizing in memorial of missing and murdered Indigenous women. In February, the annual Memorial Walk for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women took place in Vancouver's downtown East Side.
In 1995, when I started marching, there was like 15 of us up and down these streets. So to see this is somewhat overwhelming for me.
And just to see so much community come together for one purpose, it lightens my heart. And
I don't know, I guess sometimes I'm kind of in shock whenever I see how many times that we stop, because whenever we stop, it means that they found another body of another woman who was murdered. And I don't even remember how many times we've stopped today.
I don't think that people should die. I don't get it.
A lot of joy and a lot of sadness for all our relations and all our sisters that passed away. And I'm just proud and so happy to be here. I'm just full of joy to see all these ladies and the families here. It's a good day.
The walk is also an important space for family members and loved ones to express their grief.
This is my daughter! Yeah. My only daughter! I'll never get to dance at her wedding!
Nope.
Remember me, Harper! When you dance at your son or your daughter's wedding, I can't. My memories are gone forever.
My sister was murdered in 1992, and the last time I seen her was at the Balmora. And with the grief and the loss, I didn't know how to handle myself. And I turned to drugs and alcohol. and I too ended up at Hastings in Maine. All my friends were going missing and murdered. All the working girls, all my sisters, and they're gone. I felt guilty because I survived and they didn't. Why was it me and why was it not them? I remember at my 2-year cake saying those words, why was it me and not, was it them? And today I stand here at Maine and Hastings, clean and sober around a sacred circle, stating that that's why, because my voice is being heard today.
This spring, the courts announced the acquittal of the man who was alleged to have killed Cindy Gladue. Vigils were held in communities from coast to coast who were outraged at the disrespect Cindy was shown in the courts, with her dismembered pelvis being shown as evidence. An organizer of the Thunder Bay Vigil was interviewed.
I think that when we look at the violence that Indigenous women experience, that we experience because of the history of colonialism and the ongoing colonization of Canada, we bear the brunt of that violence. And, you know, what happened to Cindy is unacceptable. And I think it's so important that we come together as a society and let her family know, let her children know that we care, that we are paying attention, that we love her. And, you know, the only way this is going to stop is if we all start to pay attention and do things differently.
Following the announcement of the inquiry, President of the Native Women's Association of Canada spoke to the importance of conducting the inquiry in consultation with the families and the need to take action, recognizing the inquiry will take several years.
We have our inquiry. We got the announcement from the Prime Minister. You know, we had Carolyn Bennett here announcing, you know, that the very first phase, the pre-inquiry consultation with the families, and is literally starting immediately as of tomorrow.
Wow.
And, you know, wanting to make sure that the national inquiry is not seen as a goal in itself, that that is not seen as, you know, now they have dealt with the issue of ending violence. You know, we all know that the recommendations, the conclusions could take years, and we need to start rolling up our sleeves and getting to work right now, and there's a lot of areas we can get working. We recognize we want action now. We don't want to see the government dragging their heels. We don't want to see this take forever, but we need to take a sober second look to make sure we're doing it right, to make sure that we're not causing, you know, further trauma, especially to the families, to those women who have advocated to this for this right from the start. You know, that we cannot barrel forward ahead without them, you know, without even thinking about their being here.
Thank you to Gunnar G. O'Sullivan, Claudia Edwards, Maddie Schmidt, and Carly Forbes for the audio used in that report. We'll be right back after this music break.
I'm in denial, but it don't take no x-ray to see past my smile. Oh no, I'm on the go. But there ain't no drink that can numb my soul. Oh no, all I wanna do is take the chains off. All we wanna do is break the chains off. All we want to do is be free. All we wanna do is be free. And all we wanna do is take the chains off. All we wanna do is break the chains off. All we wanna do is be free. All we wanna do is be free. Can you tell me why? Every time I step outside, I see my people die. Oh no, oh no. I'm letting you know that there ain't no God that can make, that can break my soul. Oh no. All we wanna do is take the chains off. All we want to do is break the chains off. All we want to do is be free. All we wanna do is be free. And all we wanna do is take the chains off. All we want to do is break the chains off. All we want to do is be free. All we want to do is be free.
You just heard a cover of J. Cole's song, Be Free, performed by Lee Sean Sasha Henry at the Black U of T rally on November 18th in support of Black students standing up against racism at the University of Missouri and campuses across North America. Lee Sean is the VP of the Black Students Association at the University of Toronto. J. Cole originally wrote Be Free as a tribute to Michael Brown, a young Black teen murdered by a white police officer in Ferguson, Missouri in August of 2014. Black Lives Matter is an international activist movement that seeks justice from state-sanctioned violence against Black people and fights ingrained anti-Black racism in our societies. While the hashtag Black Lives Matter started in 2013 in the U.S., it gained dominance internationally and brought attention to the anti-Black racism in local communities. Canada's Black Lives Matter movements and the voices of Black activists brought national attention to issues such as police carding and targeting of Black youth by Toronto police, police brutality, and murder of Black men such as Andrew Locu and Jermaine Carby, and the systematic racism and violence towards Black students on university campuses. Here is a review of some of the Black Lives Matter and other Black solidarity movements covered by Groundwire this past year.
One of the main issues this year focused on by Black Lives Matter and other Black justice movements was the issue of police killings of Black men, especially in the Greater Toronto Area. While most Canadians think that this is an epidemic only in the United States, Black activists brought attention to police killings right here in Canadian cities. Andrew Locu, a Toronto resident originally from South Sudan and father of five, was gunned down by police in Toronto in July. Jermaine Carby was also shot dead by Peel Police in Brampton in September of 2014. Here are excerpts from Groundwire's coverage of Black Lives Matter's actions related to the murders of these Black men.
On July 16, Black Lives Matter Toronto attended a public board meeting of the Toronto Police Services. They came to the meeting with a list of demands in the wake of the murder of Andrew Locu. Several unmet demands were read aloud during the board meeting. Their demands included laying charges against and releasing the names of the officers involved, a public apology by the mayor and chief of police to the family, and monetary compensation for the family, including the costs of the funeral. Black Lives Matter Toronto is also demanding the recommendations made by the African Canadian Legal Clinic be implemented. This includes a systemic inquiry by the Office of the Independent Police Review Director to gauge whether there has been adequate disciplinary action taken against officers who use force against Black people living with mental health issues, body cameras to be worn by all police officers, the release of data on the number of SIU cases involving racialized people and racialized people living with mental health issues, and an inquiry by the Ontario Human Rights Commission into the disproportionate use of force used against Black people with mental health challenges.
We took the streets. We will continue to take the streets. Yes. We will continue to fight. We will disrupt lives. Yes. While we continue to die.
That was Yenea Khan from Black Lives Matter Toronto. She was speaking while blocking the Allen Expressway on Monday, July 27th. Khan was one of a group of activists whose arms were locked to one another, stretching across the major highway in Toronto. Black Lives Matter Toronto was protesting the police shootings of two Black men, Andrew Locu, who Toronto police killed in early July, and Jermaine Carby, who was killed by Peel Regional Police in September 2014. On July 21st, Ontario's Special Investigations Unit announced that the officer who shot Carby will not face any charges. In response, Black Lives Matter marched from a parkette near Eglinton and Caledonia, near where Locu was killed, to Allen Road, where they blocked traffic for almost 2 hours. Latanya Grant is Jermaine Carby's cousin and the founder of Justice for Jermaine Carby. She has been critical about the police account of the shooting and the Ontario Special Investigation Unit's handling of the case.
The officer that killed Jermaine Carby, so let's say Jermaine Carby's murderer, was just let off by the SIU. I call them the secret investigation unit because all they've been doing is keeping secrets from my family. They were not transparent at all. For the fact that a knife was not found on the scene, but then given over to them several hours later, did not have Jermaine's fingerprints on it. This came out of Tony Loparco's mouth himself, but only his DNA makes me question the SIU's integrity.
As the blockade on Allen Road entered its second hour, the protesters remain defiant.
They can't continue killing our black men and getting away with it, black women and getting away with it. Black lives do matter. We're not animals that can be shot dead in the streets. We'll do this every day if we have to until we get answers.
Carding has also been another issue focused on by Black Lives Matter movement, especially in Toronto. The practice of police carding allows police to randomly stop and question citizens and gather information that is saved and can be used in future investigations. This practice discriminately targets young black men, men of color, Aboriginal people, and people with mental health issues. Groundwire covered the changing debate and movements with carding in 2015, starting with our end of June episode.
Last week, Osgoode Law student Nia Singh filed a constitutional challenge against the Toronto Police for their practice of carding. There has been a growing community movement to get the policy and practice eliminated. Last week, Toronto Mayor John Tory said that he was reversing his opinion and would call for a stop to the carding practice. Though this week, the Toronto Police Services Board and Mayor Tory voted unanimously to revert to the 2014 policy on carding. Sam Takeley is a community organizer and a PhD student at York University.
Tory kind of softened his position, I think, or went back on and saying rather than canceling it, that they reverted back to the 2014 policy. And definitely for me, I don't think that's a win. And we got to make sure that we still have an imagination where cancellation is an option, because I think that's where we need to go on that. So going back to 2014 policy, I think even allows carding to continue right now, which still opens up all of this, you know, stopping random black people on the street, mostly black people, and asking them who they are, what are they doing, even if they're not part of an active investigation. And it's, you know, Tory showing that he can't really go through on a commitment that he made.
On October 28, the Ontario government announced draft legislation that would ban the practice of carding.
After much public pressure, Ontario Minister of Community Safety announced that the government will soon be unveiling new regulations in an effort to curb arbitrary and random stops by police. However, activists and community members around Toronto are not convinced. Black Lives Matter Toronto released a statement shortly after NACV's announcement, saying it was not a victory because the proposed regulations won't actually stop police from profiling, stopping, or intimidating black Torontonians. They simply provide a framework that disguises the existing illegal and racist practices for which police can fall back on as a justification for their actions.
Thank you to Mick Sweetman, Omisama Rahimtula, and CHRW for the audio used in that segment.
Groundwire's Community Radio Report segment explores developments at Canadian campus and community radio stations and within the sector as a whole. Here are some of the most exciting features from 2015.
My name is Ophira, and I volunteered as the National Coordinator for Groundwire from September 2014 to June 2015. One of the perks of this position is that I got to meet campus and community radio stations from across Canada and share in the excitement of all of the cool things that they accomplished. I'd like to share that excitement with you today and play you clips from some of my favorite community radio reports from Groundwire this year. This May, my favorite station, Peach City Radio in Penticton, British Columbia, got their license to broadcast on the frequency of 92.9 FM. They're just about to move into their brick-and-mortar studio at the Cannery Trade Center. Check out their fuzzy call letters.
I'm Cameron Bond. You're listening to Nerd Up to Get Down.
Hello, John Hodson back with you with a brand new show for Peach City Radio.
This is Suzanne McKinder, and you're listening to Peach City Radio.
Peach City Radio, Penticton's very own community radio station.
I'm thrilled to share with you this morning some very special news. We've got a license.
On Monday, May 4th, 2015, the CRTC released their decision approving the Peach City Community Radio Society application for a low-power English-language community FM radio station in Penticton, British Columbia. In 2016, Peach City Radio plans to broadcast a 50-watt signal under the call letters CFUZ and at a frequency of 92.9 megahertz on the FM dial.
My name is Jack Del Rizzo, and I am the Communications Director for the Peach City Community Radio Society here in Penticton, British Columbia.
And my name is Dave Del Rizzo, and I am the president of that very same society, Peach City Community Radio, now known as CFUZ.
We've just heard a taste of the Peach City Radio sound, as well as a clip from the recent media announcement in downtown Penticton regarding our license approval. What would you say have been some of the biggest challenges so far in the Peach City Radio process?
I think for us, one of the largest challenges is garnering community buy-in. There hasn't ever been a community radio station in the Okanagan, and so people are a bit reluctant to jump on the bandwagon and find out what's going on. But slowly but surely, we're building that base of members and base of educated citizens who come to understand what the purpose of community radio is, how it works, and eventually come around to seeing how they can be involved.
My favorite Groundwire experience was traveling to Kingston in February to participate in the Homelessness Marathon, an all-night broadcast about homelessness with content produced by stations all across Canada, some of it live. In this clip, Phils and Naveed from Kingston interviews head organizer Brenna Owen.
Is this the first time CFRC is hosting the Homelessness Marathon? When did the tradition start?
Yeah, this is the first time that CFRC will host the marathon. So I'll give you a little bit of background information. The Homelessness Marathon started in the United States 17 years ago, actually, in New York, at a station in New York, and it's been moving around the country ever since. So the marathon came to Canada 13 years ago. The marathon is in its 13th year. So I personally did a documentary with CFRC last year, and that, I guess I'll use the word, inspired me to kind of take on coordinating the marathon for CFRC, because what I realized when I did this documentary, which is called Beyond Closed Doors, is that hidden homelessness is extremely prevalent. So homelessness isn't the panhandler that we see on the street. That is chronic homelessness. But many more people who we might know, who we've gone to school with, have experienced hidden homelessness at one time or another. So the marathon is about shining a light on the diversity of people who experience homelessness and the diversity of reasons that people experience homelessness. And also, you know, when people experience homelessness, what happens to them? What, you know, problems do they encounter? Mental health problems, you know, everyday problems like food and shelter. So the marathon prioritizes giving a voice to, or a platform, sorry, a platform for the voices of folks who have lived experience with homelessness. So at our open mic at Martha's Table from 4 till 6 p.m. on February 25th, we're going to have folks share their stories about homelessness in Kingston and in other places.
This is Ophira Horowitz of the National Campus and Community Radio Association reporting for Groundwire.
That's it for the 2015 Year in Review episode of Groundwire. Music this week was by Lee Sean Sasha Henry. We also thank Matt Willish, Carly Forbes, Ome Salma Rahemtullah, and Ophira Horowitz. Tune in to hear Groundwire in 2016 on your local community radio station, on the Rabble Podcast Network, or download at groundwire.ncra.ca.